Then it's going to have to wait, Havelock said and dropped the connection. The midship maintenance airlock was the closest to the brig. There would be choke points at the locker room, the emergency decompression hatch, and the intersection with the maintenance corridor. He guessed the chief engineer would set up his men at the second two and let the locker room go. He might send a couple men to the brig, too, as a last ditch. He'd get pushback on that. The whole team was going to want to be in on the kill, and they'd have live ammunition. He wondered what the enemy would have. Power armor? Maybe. Maybe. We don't have to do this, Naomi said. I don't like it any more than you do, but it's how it's coming down. You're talking about it like this is physics. Like there are no choices involved. That's crazy. They're here for me. Let me go, and they'll go too. There's a way we do this, Havelock said, loading bag rounds into the shotgun. He said that, didn't he? That was him. I don't know who you're talking about, Havelock said. Murtry, the big boss. Because you do that, you know. You listen to what he says and then say it like it was something you actually believe. This isn't the time to do that. He's wrong this time. He's probably been wrong a few times before. He's not the one in lockup. I don't know, you've got a lot of right to brag. That was dumb luck, she said. If you hadn't happened to be out playing your war games, I'd have disabled your little bomb and been gone again before anyone knew it. What good would it do if I let you go? It won't make any difference. The ships are going down. There's no one here who can help us. You can't do anything to fix this. Maybe not, Naomi said. I can die trying to help, though, instead of trying to kill people or watching them die. Havelock's jaw clenched. His finger pressed against the trigger guard and he closed his eyes. It would be so easy to turn the barrel on the cage. Fire a bag against the mesh and drive Naomi to the back of her cell. Only he wasn't going to do that. The release started in his chest and spread out to his fingers and toes in less than a heartbeat. He pushed himself over to her and thumbed his code into the keypad. The cage clicked open. Come on then, he said. Chapter 41. Elvi. Scientific nomenclature was always difficult. Naming a new organism on Earth, and even in the greater Sol system, had a lengthy, tedious process, and the sudden massive influx of samples from New Terra would probably clog the scientific literature for decades. It wasn't just the mimic lizards or the insect-like flyers. Every bacterial analog would be new. Every single-celled organism would be unfamiliar. Earth alone had managed 5 kingdoms of life. 6 if you agreed with the Fityani hypothesis. She couldn't imagine that the ecosphere of New Terra would turn out to be much simpler. But in the meantime, the thing living in her eyes, in all their eyes except Holden's, wouldn't even officially be a known organism for years. Maybe decades. It would be officially nameless until it was placed within the larger context of life. Until then, she'd decided to call it Skippy. Somehow it seemed less frightening when it had a silly nickname. Not that she'd be any less dead if she bumbled into a death slug, but at this point anything helped. And she was getting a little punchy. The interesting thing, one of the interesting things about the organism was that it didn't have chlorophyll or apparently anything like it. The green color came from a prismatic effect analogous to butterfly wings. The actual tissue growing in her eyes would have been a light brown that was almost clear if its structure had been even a little bit different. The scattering effect wouldn't happen. It also meant that her blindness was a flooding of color and a loss of detail, but it wasn't particularly dark. She could still close her eyes and see the world go black and open them to the bright, vibrant green. Anything else was beyond her now. Gone. She navigated her hand terminal by voice commands, touch, and memory. The reports she would have skimmed through, she listened to now. Voices from the labs at Luna and Earth and Ganymede. They didn't offer her much hope. While your immune subject does have a couple rare alleles in the genes regulating his sodium pumps, I'm not seeing anything in the final protein structure that's changed. The ion concentrations are stable and within the standard error bars. I'll keep looking, but I've got the feeling that we're barking up the wrong tree here. Sorry to say it. Elvie nodded, as if there were anyone there who could see her. The headache was still with her. It varied during the day, but she didn't know if that was part of the infection or just her experience. Hey, Faez said, and then, Elvie, are you here?
I am,
she said. Well, keep talking a little. I've got food on both hands. Elvie hummed a pop melody from when she'd been a child and listened for Faez's shuffling feet, reaching out to touch his calf when he was near. He folded himself down beside with a soft grunt. Her hand found his, and he gave her the rations packet. My next assignment, he said, I'm working somewhere with maybe half Earth gravity. Wait, who needs it? Elvie chuckled. He wanted her to, and she even meant it a little. The foil was slick under her fingertips. She felt like she was a little girl, sneaking snacks under the covers when she was supposed to be asleep, doing everything by touch. The wrapping of Faez's bar crinkled brightly. How much more food do we have? She asked. Not much. I think they're trying for one more drop, though. There are a couple of people who can still make out some shapes. And Holden. The one-eyed king, Faez said. We should poke out one of his eyes just to make that fit better, don't you think? Him having two eyes is a real missed opportunity. Hush, she said, and the foil gave way under her fingers. The emergency bar was crumbly and smelled like rat food from her days at the labs. It tasted unpleasant and nutritious. She tried to savor it. It wouldn't be long before she missed this. Any luck? He asked. She shook her head by reflex. She knew he couldn't see it. The best theory we had was that it was related to the plural parentage. He's got something like 8 mothers and fathers, and the techniques to manage that can leave some systemic traces, but nothing so far. Well, that's a shame. Maybe all the exposure to the protomolecule changed him into a space mutant. She took another bite and talked around it. Oh, you can laugh. But Luna's looking at that, too. And they're trying to grow a fresh sample of the organism based on the sample data we sent. The early trials are showing some real self-organization. Kicking off another 500 years of graduate theses, Faez said. I don't think you have to worry about your legacy. Fingertips brushed against her knee. The physical act of reaching out, undercutting the cynicism of his words. She took his hand in hers, squeezing the pad at the base of his thumb. He shifted closer to her. She could smell his body. None of them had been able to bathe since the storm came, and they probably all reeked. But her nose had become accustomed to the worst of it. She only experienced his scent as an almost pleasant funk, like a wet dog. Not the one I'd have chosen, she said. And yet our names will live forever. You as the first discoverer of a new planet full of species. Me as the simple geologist who waited on you hand and foot. Why are you flirting? Flirting's the last thing to go, Faez said. She wished she could see his face. You do science, I hit on the smartest and prettiest woman in the room. Everyone has their ways of coping with the brutal specter of mortality. And rain. Coping with rain. My next assignment, I want someplace without so much rain. In the next room, a child started crying. An exhausted, frightened sound. A woman, Lucia maybe, sang to it in a language Elvie didn't know. She popped the last of the bar into her mouth. She needed to get some water. She wasn't sure how long it had been since the chemistry deck had pumped out a clean bag. If it wasn't time to switch out yet, it would be soon. Holden had said he'd come by and do it, but she wasn't sure that was true. He was dead on his feet already, and he didn't rest, even when he needed to. Well, she could probably figure out how to switch out a water bag she couldn't see. "We shouldn't have come," Fayez said. "All those crazy bastards talking about how the worlds beyond Medina Station were going to be tainted and evil. They were right." "No one said that, did they?"
"Someone probably did. If they didn't, they should have."
"You could really have stayed away?" she asked as she rose to her knees and started reaching for the chemistry deck. She could hear the soft ticking of the clean water coming through the outtake filter, a different timbre than the constant rain. "If they came to you with the chance to go to the first really new world, you'd have been able to say no?"
"I'd have waited for the second wave," Fayez said.
She found the bag. The soft, cold curve wasn't as heavy as she'd expected. The deck wasn't putting out water as quickly as it had been. But if there was an error in the system, it hadn't made a noise. Something else for Holden to check.
"I'd still have come," she said.
"All this? And you'd still have come?"
"I wouldn't have known about this. This wouldn't have happened yet. I'd know I was taking a risk. I did know. Of course I'd get on that ship."
"What if you knew it was going to be like this? What if you could look into some crystal ball and see us here, the way it's all happened?"
"If we could do that, we'd never explore anything," she said.
It was very strange to think that they were all going to die. She knew it, but it still seemed unreal. In the back of her mind, a small, insistent voice kept saying that a ship would arrive to help them, that another group on the planet would show up with extra food or water or shelter. She'd catch herself wondering if they shouldn't be signaling for help, and have to make the effort to recall that there were no other bases, no other ships. In the whole solar system, there were just the crews and passengers of three ships, and fewer now than there had been before. Even with all of them packed into the ruins together like refugees, so close they could hear each other snore, it made the universe seem very empty and frightening.
"We should find Holden," she said. "The water's coming slow."
"I wonder, maybe he has a really good immune system? The fact that we're all getting discharge means we've got some immune response to it. Like a splinter, maybe. It just grows faster than we can knock it out. Maybe Holden has some exposure that gives him antibodies to do it."
"Did the blood scans find anything?"
"No," she said. "His white cell count is lower than ours, too."
"Maybe his eyeball juice tastes bad," Fayez said.
"What?"
"I didn't say anything."
"No, but you made that little I've got an idea grunt. I've heard that grunt. It means something."
"I was just thinking that it can't be his immune system," she said. "I mean, we're all traveling in hard vacuum all the time. The radiation just on the way out here probably left us all a little immunocompromised. And especially after Eros Station, he's had more radiation damage."
Elvie closed her eyes, shutting out the green. A beautiful cascade of logic and implication opened before her like stepping into a garden. She caught her breath and grinned. The joy of insight lifted her up.
"What?" Fayez said. "He's overcooked? The eye thing only likes us rare and he's well done?"
"Oh," Elvie said. "It's his onchocytals. After the Eros incident, he had to go on a permanent course of them. And that means... Oh, that's so pretty."
"Oh, good. What are you talking about? Why would his anti-cancer meds work on something from a different biosphere?"
It means there's a Dawkinsian good move down around cell division somewhere.
That's one of those xenobiology things, isn't it? Because I've got no idea what you're on about.
Elvie patted her hands in the air. The pleasure running through her blood felt like being carried by light. I told you about this, she said, that there are good moves, maybe even forced moves, in design space, because we see things that show up again and again all through different branches of the Tree of Life.
Right, Fayez said, which is why we can come to New Terra and find things that have eyes and stuff.
Because bounced light has a lot of information in it, and organisms with that information do better.
Preaching to the choir, Elvie.
But that's not the good part. Holden's on medications that selectively address fast-dividing tissues. Skippy's a fast-dividing tissue.
Who's Skippy?
The organism. Focus here. That the onchocytals work against it means there's something like flight or sense organs near the mouth that's going on at the level of cell division. Even though the proteins are totally different, the solutions they're coming up with are analogous. That's the biggest thing since we came here. This is huge. Where's my hand terminal? I have to tell the team on Luna. They're going to lose their minds.
She moved forward too quickly, stumbling into Fayez. He pressed the terminal into her hands. She sat beside him.
Are you bouncing up and down? He asked.
Because you sound like you're bouncing.
This is the most important thing that's happened to me in my life, she said. I'm floating.
So, this means we can treat the eye thing, right?
What? Oh, yeah, probably.
It's not like onchocytals are hard to synthesize. Just most of us don't need a constant course the way Holden does.
You're the only woman I have ever known who would figure out how to keep a bunch of starving refugees, including herself, from going blind and be excited because it means something about microbiology.
You should get out more. Meet people, Elvie said. But she felt a little pull of guilt. She probably should try to get people treated before she started talking to the team on Luna. It was still just a hypothesis, anyway. She didn't have any data yet.
Connection request, Murtry.
Her hand terminal chimed that it was working. A gust of wind made the plastic window flutter. It sounded a little different than usual, and the constantly falling rain sounded louder. She wondered if the sheeting might be coming unsealed. There could be death slugs creeping around the room, and she wouldn't have known, wouldn't have seen them. Something else she'd have to ask Holden to check. The double tone of connection refused made her grunt.
Who's working on the drops? She asked.
Upstairs? Havelock, I think.
Connection request Havelock.
The hand terminal made a single chime and then stopped. She wasn't sure if it had gone through or failed.
Mr. Havelock, are you there? She asked.
I'm afraid it's not a good time, Doctor.
You're coordinating the drops? I need to see if we can get...
Is this something where people are going to die if I don't fix it in the next 5 minutes?
5 minutes? She said. No.
Then it's going to have to wait.
The hand terminal made the falling tone of a dropped connection.
Well, that was fucking rude, Fayez said.
He probably has something else going on, she said.
We're all under a little stress here. Doesn't mean he has to be a dick about it.
Elvie lifted her eyebrows and nodded, knowing as she did that he couldn't see her.
Connection request Holden.
The tone cycled until she was afraid he wouldn't answer either. When he did, his voice sounded terrible, like he was drunk or sick.
Elvie, what's the matter?
Hi, she said. I don't know if you're busy right now, and you're not really responsible for getting supplies to us, but if you have a minute, I'd like to...
Fayez shouted, interrupting her.
She knows how to make us not blind.
There was a pause. Holden grunted. She imagined it was the effort of standing up.
Okay, I'll be right there.
Bring Lucia, Elvie said, if you can find her.
Is Murtry going to be there?
He's not answering my connection requests.
Hmm, Holden said. That's good. I don't think he's happy with me right now.
Lucia sat at Elvie's side, holding her hand. It should have felt like an intimacy, but in context it only seemed to indicate that she was giving Elvie her full attention. A physical analog to eye contact. Holden was pacing around the room, his footsteps sticky-sounding with the mud. When she was done, Lucia made a ticking sound with her tongue and teeth. I don't know how we'd manage dosages. I don't want to give people so little that it doesn't have an effect.
What about picking babysitters? Faya said. A dozen people whose cases aren't as advanced. Shoot them up. They can take care of the rest of us until there's another drop. Captain?
What?
Oh, sorry, I was, there's a hole in the window. Plastic. I was just making sure there weren't any death slugs in here, and fixing it.
Captain, Lucia said, her voice sharp and crisp. You're taking medications for a chronic and potentially terminal condition. We are discussing whether or not to use your medication to treat other patients and leave you without.
That's fine.
Ethically, it's actually a little problematic, Lucia said. If I'm going to do this, and I very much want to, I need to know that you understand.
I do, he said. I've sucked down enough radiation that I bloom tumors a lot. The thing that keeps it under control does that thing with the other thing, and then there are other people, and I can take a nap.
Elvie could hear Lucia's smile when she spoke. I'm not sure the human subjects board would call that sufficient, but broadly, yes.
Of course you use it, he said. Use it, go ahead. We'll get more if we can.
And if we can't?
I might get a new tumor before we starve. I might not, Holden said. I'm okay with that.
Lucia took back her hand, leaving Elvie's feeling a little colder.
All right then, we should start.
Can you guide me, please, Captain?
Yes, Holden said. Yes, I can. But we may need to get a cup of coffee. I'm feeling a little tired. I can get you some stimulants if you'd like, but there's no coffee.
Right, Holden said. No coffee. This is a terrible, terrible planet.
Show me how to make everyone better.
Chapter 42. Havelock. The armor in the brig was a simple, unpowered suit of Kevlar and ceramic. It was vacuum-rated and had a fitting for a half-hour air bottle. Its intended uses included breaking up brawls among the crew and making short, tactical spacewalks. There were probably a dozen more like it up in the main security station. He hoped that the engineers didn't think of them. When Havelock stepped into it, it pulled his pant legs up, bunching the cloth uncomfortably at the crotch. He put the shotgun strap over his shoulder and shifted, using both hands to pluck the pant back into place.
Laughter doesn't help, he said.
Wasn't laughing, Naomi replied, then laughed. He took a fistful of disposable handcuffs and two tasers from the gun locker. One had a full charge, the other was at 3/8. He made a mental note to check the batteries on all the weapons later, then remembered that there probably wasn't going to be a later. Not for him, at least. He could leave a note for Wei or something. He thought about calling Marwick, warning him that things were getting complex, relying on the man's decency and instincts. He didn't do it. Naomi, floating behind him, stretched out, her fingers and toes splayed in the open air. Her paper jumpsuit crinkled and popped with every motion. Havelock looked around his office one last time. It was strange, knowing he probably wouldn't see it again. And if he did, it'd be from the inside of the cage. If that happened, though, it would be because they'd found some way to keep from dropping into the atmosphere, burning in the high air. So the chances were low. He wasn't going to worry about it.
First mutiny? Naomi said.
Yeah, it's not really something I do.
It gets easier, she said, holding out her hand. He looked at it in confusion. I can take one of those.
No, he said, tuning the suit-com unit to the channel the training group used as a default. There was no chatter at all. That was odd. He cycled through the other frequencies.
No?
Look, I'm getting you out of here. Doesn't mean I'm comfortable handing you a weapon and turning my back.
You have interesting personal boundaries, Naomi said.
I may be working through some things right now. The first militiaman flew through the doorway too fast, pumped on adrenaline and unaccustomed to having a gun in his hand. The second came just behind him, feet first. Havelock felt his gut go tight. They both had pistols in their hands and armbands around their biceps. Naomi, behind him, took a breath.
Gentlemen, Havelock said with a nod, how can I help you?
What the hell do you think you're doing? The first one demanded, trying to bring his gun to bear and steady himself against the wall at the same time.
Moving the prisoner, Havelock said, his voice pitched just between contempt and incredulity. What else would I be doing?
Chief didn't say anything about that, the second one said.
Chief Engineer Kunin isn't head of security on this ship. I am. You guys are helping me. And don't get me wrong, I appreciate it, but keep in mind that this is what I do, all right? What the hell are you two doing here?
They exchanged a glance.
Chief told us to come guard the prisoner.
Naomi smiled and looked demure and non-threatening. She faked it pretty well.
Good plan, Havelock said. This is where they'll be coming. You two set up here in case they get through. Once I've got this one safely stowed where they won't find her, I'll come reinforce you.
Yes, sir, the second man said, making a sharp salute with the same hand that had the gun in it.
Havelock flinched. These guys were so not ready for live rounds.
Havelock pulled the shotgun to ready and racked it.
Miss Nagata, he said, if you'd be so kind.
Yes, sir, she said meekly and pushed off for the door.
He followed, catching himself on the doorframe and turning back.
If anyone comes through, identify them before you start shooting, all right? I don't want anyone to get hurt by mistake.
We will, sir, the first one said. The second one nodded.
Havelock would have wagered half his salary that they'd been planning to open up on anyone that came through the door.
Naomi waited for him just down the corridor. He put the shotgun's safety on and let it trail from his shoulder.
All the corridors in the Israel were narrow, but more so here. The nearer you got to the outside, the tighter the space became. The cloth and padding along the walls ate the sounds of the ship. Numeric codes printed on the material listed what conduits and technical systems were buried in the bulkhead underneath them, the model of panel, and their replacement dates. The idea behind the foam and cloth was to make everyone safer in case of a collision or unexpected burn. Right now, it made him think of a padded cell.
Havelock nodded back over his shoulder. If something happens, don't go back there without me.
Hadn't planned on it.
They moved down the corridor, Havelock taking lead and gesturing her forward. She didn't move with the tactical instinct of someone trained to do it, but she was smart and quiet and caught on quickly. She also had a belter's grace and zero G. If he'd had a few weeks with a squad of people like her, he'd have given them live rounds. At the wall before the intersection with the maintenance corridor, he gestured to the thin ceramic lip of the bulkhead.
Stay here, he whispered, and stay small.
Naomi lifted her fist. Havelock moved forward. At the intersection, two more of the team were braced in what they probably thought was a cover position. One of them was solid. The other had his hand too far forward. If he tried to push off, he'd get a backspin that would turn him away from the fight. They'd been over this.
Gentlemen, Havelock said as he slid forward through the air. Walters and Honecker, right?
Yes, sir, Honecker said,
What's our situation?
Chief called for radio silence. Don't want to warn the enemy what we're up to. We've got Boyd and Mfume at the decompression hatch. Chief's got Salvatore and Kemp. They're going forward to flush the bad guys out.
Who do we have outside?
Outside?
He shook his head, uncomprehending.
Did we put anybody in suits and send them out the other airlocks?
Hey, Honecker said. That's a good idea, we should do that.
So, didn't do it already, Havelock said.
No, sir, didn't think of it.
All right, Havelock said.
And the dry rattle of gunfire echoed from down the corridor. The two engineers turned, pulling themselves to look. Honecker pulled a little too hard, launching himself into the corridor where anyone coming the other direction could have shot him while he flailed. The radio clicked to life in Havelock's ear. The chief engineer sounded like a kid at a birthday party.
We have contact! We have contact! The enemy's taken cover in the lavatory by secondary supply. We have him pinned down.
A flurry of shots rang out, coming through the radio a fraction of a second before the sound could move through the ship's air. Kunin started shouting at someone to pull back, then realized his radio was still live and cut it. Havelock braced his ankle in a handhold, stretched out to Honecker and pulled him back in gently.
What do we do?
Walters said as Honecker steadied himself on a handhold.
Should we go forward? We could grab some suits and go around like you said.
Havelock took out the fully charged taser, shaking his head. It was ready to fire. The second one, with a low charge, took half a second to go to ready status. The two men were looking at him for guidance.
You should both look down the corridor,
Havelock said, pointing at the intersection with his chin. When they turned, he shot them both in the back. Their bodies arched, shuddered, and went still. Havelock took their pistols, disabled their suit radios, and handcuffed them first to each other and then to one of the handholds.
Clear,
he said over his shoulder, his voice calm but strong enough to carry. Naomi moved forward, shifting from one side of the corridor to the other so that she was never more than a fraction of a second from something solid she could use to change direction. Good instincts.
That's four down, she said. Are you really good at this, or are they really bad?
Teaching may not be my strong suit, Havelock said, and we do have the element of surprise on our side.
I guess, Naomi said, her voice making her skepticism clear.
How are you doing?
Havelock started to say, I'm fine, by reflex, and then paused. He had just attacked and disabled two of his crewmen, who'd been working at the direct and explicit order of his superior officer. He'd betrayed the trust of men he'd been traveling with for years on behalf of a Belter saboteur. And they were all of them days from dying. And, maybe oddly, it was the last fact that made all the rest all right. He was a dead man. They were all dead men. So there was a sense in which what he did now didn't matter. He was free to follow his conscience, wherever it led. It was the security man's nightmare scenario. In the face of death, why wouldn't there be riots? Why wouldn't there be killing and theft and rape? If there were no consequences, or if all the consequences were the same, then anything became possible. It was his job to expect the worst of humanity, including himself. And now here he was, helping a lawfully bound prisoner escape, because he liked the death she offered him better than Murtry's plastic and ceramic sepulcher standing on an empty planet. He didn't give a good goddamn about New Terra, or Illis, or whatever the unpleasant ball of mud under them got called. He cared about the people, the ones on the Israel, and the ones on the Barba Piccola, and the ones on the surface. All of them. Staking a claim that the corporation could use to protect its assets after they all died just wasn't good enough.
I'm weirdly at peace with this, he said.
Probably a good sign, she said,
and a fresh round of shooting started. Havelock gestured for her to stay and pushed forward. All the major corridors on the Israel had decompression hatches, thick circles of metal with hard polymer seals. Most of the time, they were bumps in the walls, larger than the ship designs a generation or two later, but easy enough to ignore. If something holed the ship, the hatch would close with the speed and amorality of a guillotine. If someone got caught in it, one loss was better than venting the air. Havelock had seen training videos about misfires, and he'd been nervous around them ever since. One man was pressed to the wall, eyeing the corridor ahead anxiously. Havelock cleared his throat, and the man spun, pistol at the ready.
"Mfume,"
Havelock said, his palms up.
"Where's Boyd?"
"He went forward," Mfume said, gesturing with the gun but not lowering it.
"The chief's getting shot at. He told me to stay here, and I stayed, but it's all right,"
Havelock said, moving closer slowly, not making eye contact. He kept looking down the corridor, trying to shift the man's attention there. The raised pistol made his chest itch.
"You did the right thing."
The radio crackled back to life, and the chief engineer spoke. He sounded winded.
"We've locked the little bastard down. He winged Salvatore, but it's not bad. I need everyone up here. We're going to rush him."
"That's probably not a good idea," Havelock said on the open channel.
"It's all right," the chief engineer said. "We can take him."
"Not without casualties that you don't have to take," Havelock said.
"Is he in armor?"
"Yeah, I'm pretty sure I got one hit on him," another voice said, its tone high and tight, like a kid on his first hunt who thinks he shot a deer.
"Everyone check in," the chief said.
"Jones and I are in the brig, chief. Everything's quiet."
"Prisoner giving you any shit?"
the chief asked.
"I moved her," Havelock said. "She's fine. I need you to pull back now. We have to do this by the numbers."
Another half-dozen gunshots peppered the air. Mfume twitched with each of them. Havelock gently pushed the barrel of the man's gun away until it pointed at the wall. Mfume didn't seem to notice he'd done it.
"No can do," Kernan said. "If we let up, this Belter son of a bitch is going to get loose. We've got to finish this thing. Honecker, Walters, get your nuts in your palms and head forward, boys. This piece of shit is going down."
The silence on the radio was eerie.
"Walters?"
the chief engineer said. Havelock took Mfume's wrist and twisted, bracing one leg against the wall for leverage. Mfume cried out, but he loosened his grip on the gun enough for Havelock to bat it away. The black metal spun down the corridor, and Mfume yelled and tried to push him away. Havelock shifted his grip, pulling out and down, peeling Mfume away from his bracing wall. The engineer screamed again, and Havelock fired the taser into his back. Mfume bounced against the far wall, limp as a puppet, and Havelock pulled the shotgun off his back and shifted to jam one knee against the lip of the decompression hatch and the other foot behind him against a handhold.
"Nagata," he shouted. "We're about to have company."
Down the corridor, the chief engineer boiled around the corner and slammed into the wall, firing his pistol wildly.
"Cease fire," Havelock called. "You've got one of your own floating outside cover. Cease fire."
"Fuck you,"
Kernan shouted, and Havelock pulled the shotgun's trigger. The background took the chief in the side and sent him spinning. Havelock landed the second shot in the man's back just as three more engineers caromed around the corner in a clump. Havelock shot each of them once, then shifted himself to the other side of the hatch and pushed off, stowing the shotgun and pulling the tasers. The low-charge one was already dead, and he dropped it. One of the men was bleeding. A droplet of blood the size of a fingernail floated in the air. All four men were gasping in pain. Two of them had dropped their weapons, and the other two, the bleeding man and Kernan, seemed unaware Havelock was there at all.
Havelock tased the first of the floating men, then grabbed the one who was bleeding, Salvatore.
You, Kemp.
You shot me.
With a bag round. The other guy shot Salvatore with a bullet. You need to get them to the medical bay.
You're a traitor, the chief engineer shouted, and Havelock tased him before turning back to Kemp.
I'm taking your gun away and I'm giving you Salvatore. You're helping him get to the medical bay now, you understand?
Yes, sir, Kemp said, then looked over Havelock's shoulder and nodded.
Ma'am?
Everything under control? Naomi asked.
Wouldn't go that far, Havelock said, putting Kemp's hand on Salvatore's arm and giving them both a little shove back up the corridor.
I'm fairly sure the two from the brig are on their way down here.
We should leave then.
That's what I was thinking.
The short stretch of corridor between the corner and the airlock had a sealed door to secondary storage, a low access panel to the power conduits in the walls, and the entrance to the maintenance airlock's locker room. The space was narrow and cramped. Bullet holes pocked the cloth. One of them had penetrated the wall and hit a hydraulic tube. The safety hydraulic fluid was polymerizing in the air, 100 tiny greenish dots slowly turning white. The original leak was probably already sealed with a hunk of the stuff. The washroom was the standard utility size, so small that squatting on the vacuum seat meant pressing back to one wall and knees to the other. It wouldn't have been much for cover in the first place, and the narrow door stood open. A dozen bullet holes scarred the walls and the doorway.
Okay, Havelock said, and a gun popped out, firing blind down the hallway.
He pushed Naomi behind him, shouting, Stop! Stop! I've got Nagata right here!
Stay the hell back!
A man's voice shouted from the washroom. It sounded almost familiar, but Havelock couldn't place it.
I swear to God, I'll shoot!
I noticed!
Havelock shouted back.
It's okay, Baja, Naomi called. It's me.
The voice went silent. Havelock moved forward slowly, ready for the gun to reappear. It didn't. The man floating in the washroom wore military body armor of a Martian design that was maybe half a decade out of date. His hair was dark with flecks of gray at the temples, and he had a welding torch in one hand. The gun was in the other. His eyes were wide and his skin was ashy. A streak across the side of the armor showed where one of the militia's bullets had skipped off his ribs. Havelock put up his left hand, palm out, but kept the taser tight in his right.
Okay, he said. It's all right. We're all on the same side here.
Who the hell are you?
The man demanded.
You're the security guy. The one that locked her up.
Used to be, Havelock said.
Naomi put her hands on Havelock's shoulders, pulling herself over to see the other man.
We're leaving, she said. Want to come with?
Chapter 43 Baja.
We're leaving, Naomi said. Want to come with?
Baja felt a powerful flush of embarrassment. Things had started out so well. He'd cut into the Israel's airlock control panel with the efficiency of long practice. The composite plating had been an old layering system he'd seen often working on Ganymede, and the familiarity had given him a sense of confidence. He floated through the short corridor to a storage and locker room without seeing a soul, clutching his pistol in one hand. He'd hoped the weapon would turn out to be unnecessary. On the other side of the locker room was the starboard passageway that would lead to the brig. He was about 60 meters from his goal, and not even an alarm had gone off. His first sign that things were going wrong was a massive barrage of gunfire that seemed to come from everywhere at once. He'd been hiding in the tiny lavatory closet ever since.
I came to rescue you. Baja said, recognizing how silly the words sounded even as he said them.
Thanks for that, Naomi replied with a smile.
Yeah, so we should probably keep the earther in the body armor started to say, then was cut off by a new fusillade of shots. Bullets bounced off the corridor walls, tearing strips of foam off to join the floating blobs of solidified hydraulic fluid. The earther shoved Naomi into the lavatory with Baja, mashing them both against the back wall. More shots hit, including one that skipped off the earthman's shoulder plating, leaving a long, dented streak. "I'm Baja," he said. The earther leaned around the doorway with a bulky rifle of some kind and fired several booming shots. "Have luck. Let's cover the rest once we're out of here." Before Baja knew she was going to do it, Naomi plucked the pistol out of his hand and held it out to Havelock. "You might need this." "No," he replied, and fired off his big rifle a few more times. "No lethal rounds. We're not killing these idiots if we can avoid it." "Then what?" she asked. Havelock was pulling fat shotgun shells out of a pouch on his armor and loading them into his gun. "As soon as I move into the corridor, you two head to the airlock as fast as you can." He loaded one last shell into the gun, then racked it with a loud clack. "Baja, you're armored, so keep her in front of you. Naomi, you'll be moving through a storage compartment. Grab a suit. Anything you can put on fast." "Ready when you are," Naomi replied and put a hand on Havelock's shoulder. Baja nodded his fist at the Earthman. "Then go," Havelock said, and darted into the corridor, firing his shotgun. Naomi followed him out and turned the other direction toward the locker room and the airlock. Baja stayed right behind. They'd only gone a few meters when he felt two bruising hammer blows in his back. "I'm shot," he yelled in a panic. "I got shot." Naomi didn't slow down. "Is your HUD telling you you're bleeding out?" "No." "Then you'll live. That's what the armor's for." "Less talk," Havelock said from right behind him, and gave him a shove in the back. "More escaping." Baja hadn't even known he was there. He stifled an undignified squeak. Several meters ahead, Naomi darted into the storage room, and Baja followed when he reached the doorway. She was already wriggling her way into a bright orange emergency atmosphere suit. Havelock paused at the door to fire several more shots down the corridor. "Tune to 27015, the earther said. "What?" The words made no sense to Baja, and the whole sequence of events was more and more coming to feel like a bad dream. People shooting and spouting nonsense at him. The sense of peace and heroism he'd felt when he agreed to the rescue mission was entirely gone. "It's the frequency the security team's using," Havelock said. "You can listen in. They aren't encrypting. Because," he sighed, "they're fucking amateurs." Baja found the menu to switch his suit's radio frequency and set it to 27.015. "In on it," a voice said, young, male, angry. "The fact that he's shooting back at us makes it pretty goddamn clear," an older voice said. "He shot me with a couple fucking beanbag rounds. I think he broke a rib." "So," Havelock said, then paused to fire off another shot. "I guess this is a decision I don't get to take back." Baja couldn't tell who he was talking to. "I'm gonna shoot you in the face, asshole," the older man said. This was followed by another barrage of gunfire that tore up the hallway. "Mostly you're shooting the ship, Chief," Havelock replied. His voice was matter of fact. He seemed halfway between being embarrassed on the attacker's behalf and steeled for more violence of his own. Baja remembered someone telling him about the idea of Bushido, back when he'd first signed on for work on Ganymede. They'd said it was the peace and effectiveness that came from already thinking yourself as dead. Havelock reminded him of that. "Kemp," the older voice said, "are you in position?" "We're suited up and moving to emergency access 111, a voice replied. "Go faster. Get ahead of them." "Hey, Kemp," Havelock said. "Thought I sent you to medical with Salvatore. You didn't leave him bleeding out in a corridor somewhere, did you?" "No, sir," Kemp replied.
Someone's taking him there now.
Stop talking to him,
the angry older man said. He is not on our team. Naomi was struggling to get the emergency suit over her shoulders, and Baja pushed over to help her. Havelock stayed at the locker room hatch, occasionally firing down the corridor. Find an air bottle, Naomi said, then started opening locker doors and rummaging through the contents. Baja helped.
Hey, Mfume, Havelock said.
What?
A new voice snapped.
Turning on your boot mags to stick to the floor behind cover is a good instinct, but in the position you're crouched in, your knee is sticking out past the corner.
Havelock fired a shot from his shotgun, and someone on the radio screeched in pain.
See?
Baja found a locker full of emergency air bottles and helped Naomi connect one to her suit, twisting it to break the seal. A few seconds later, she gave him the thumbs up.
We're ready to go, she told Havelock.
The Earther fired off a few more shots, then backed into the locker room with them. He handed his shotgun to Naomi, who pointed it at the doorway to cover them while the two men sealed their helmets.
Changed your mind about giving me a gun? Naomi asked.
I'll want it back.
We're ready out here, Kemp said on the radio.
Hey, guys, Havelock said.
Don't do that. We'd barely started on the spacewalk combat tactics. You head out there with live ammo and it will get really dangerous.
Well, the chief said,
Stop talking to him, the older man yelled, loud enough to distort Baja's helmet speakers. God damn it, you guys!
Kernan, Havelock said. His voice sounded subtly different now that his helmet was on and sealed.
I'm serious, don't send your guys out there. Someone's gonna get hurt or dead.
Yeah, the chief replied.
You belter-loving traitorous son of a bitch.
How are those ribs, chief? Havelock said, a smile in his voice.
You see, right now you're acting out of anger, not thinking it through. This is why I didn't want to break out the live rounds.
Baja strapped on the EVA pack he'd left by the airlock hatch. Naomi handed him the shotgun and pulled two more packs out of storage. A moment later, she and Havelock were wearing them, and the inner airlock door was cycling closed. Havelock took the shotgun away from Baja and hung it from a strap on his harness. Naomi started the airlock cycle.
You know, she said, they can just kill this airlock from the bridge.
As if in response to her words, the airlock status light on the control panel shifted to red, and the cycle stopped. Havelock punched something into the panel, and it started again.
They won't have had time to reset all the security overrides, he said.
RCE security can countermand ship operations? Naomi asked.
Welcome to corporate security.
The ship's crew are glorified taxi drivers. Security division works directly for the company, protecting its interests. We can override anything they do.
This is why everyone hates you, Baja said.
The airlock cycle completed and the outer door opened. Havelock gestured them out.
You sure you don't like me right now?
Just a little bit? Illis's star was just peeking around the limb of the planet, and Baja's visor dimmed dramatically to keep it from blinding him. The planet itself was the same angry ball of storm-racked gray clouds. In the distance, the Rocinante flashed green and red landing lights at them, marking its position.
Okay, Havelock said, his voice crackling with low-level static. Should probably get moving. They've got guys outside on the other side of the ship. They can't catch us, but watch each other for grapnel lines.
Naomi was already firing her EVA pack, moving out of the airlock on four small white cones of compressed gas.
Alex, we're out.
Oh, thank God, the pilot said, his drawl mostly disappearing in the tension of his voice. I've been worried sick over here. Baja with you?
Yeah, Baja said. I'm here.
You'll be picking up three, Naomi said. Come get us.
Three?
Taking a stray home with me.
A stray? Havelock said, amusement in his voice. I'm the one doing the rescuing here.
It's complicated, Naomi continued. They all were out of the airlock now. The remote connection light went on in Baja's HUD, and a complex program began spooling across it. Alex having the Rocinante take control of their EVA navigation to bring them to the ship. The pack did several sharp burns, and the Rocinante began slowly growing.
Glad Baja made it okay, Alex said. Worried sending him in there like that.
I didn't wind up helping much, Baja admitted, feeling that same rush of embarrassment.
You got everyone looking in the wrong direction, Havelock said. That was actually pretty helpful.
Yay, Alex said. We're all heroes. There are four guys tailing you right now. Do we know about them?
A small box appeared on Baja's HUD. Inside it was a video of four people in vacuum suits and wearing EVA packs, the bulk of the Edward Israel behind them. Without his doing anything, the view zoomed in until he could see the weapons they were carrying. Alex was sending them all images pulled from the Rocinante's telescopes.
Yeah, those are the militia I formed and trained, Havelock said, then sighed. In retrospect, that's seeming like a bad idea.
Do you want me to take care of that? Alex asked.
Does your version of taking care of it involve your ship's point defense cannons?
Havelock replied.
Yeah. Then no. These guys are dumb and untrained enough to still be gung-ho, but they're just engineers. They're not bad guys, Havelock said.
They're shooting at you, Alex said.
And suddenly Baja's HUD had red lines across it.
Got the Rosie tracking bullet paths.
The knowledge that there were silent, invisible, and potentially deadly projectiles flying past him made Baja's scalp tingle. The red lines on the display apparently meant more to Havelock because the Earther said,
They're nowhere near us. They haven't got HUD integrated targeting, so they're just spraying and praying right now. There's no reason to return fire.
XO, Alex said.
It took Baja a second to realize he was talking to Naomi.
Havelock's calling this one, she replied. They're his people.
Okay, Alex said doubtfully.
The Rocinante continued to grow minute by minute until Baja could see the tiny ring of lights around its airlock. He'd only been on the ship a short time, but it felt like coming home. His EVA pack fired off a quick series of blasts and spun him around to face the Israel, then began braking. Almost there.
Guys, Havelock said, recoilless is an exaggeration. It doesn't mean there's no recoil at all.
It sounded like more nonsense talk to Baja until he looked at the Rocinante's video of the pursuing team and saw one of the four men spinning and rotating in space, frantically firing his EVA pack to get under control. It only seemed to make it worse, as every blast of gas from the pack just added a new axis to the rotation.
Then that's an inaccurate name for the weapons,
the man called Kemp replied.
And if we'd gotten to more advanced zero-G tactics, I would have explained that, Havelock said. I also would have taught you to use the integrated compensation software to have the EVA pack do stabilizing bursts every time you fired the gun.
Seems to me there's a lot you didn't show us, Kemp replied.
Yeah, and now that you're shooting at me, I'm just sick about that. In the meantime, please stop. Drake is way out of control and drifting away from you guys. Someone needs to go get him before he gets too far.
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
The one Havelock had called Kernan said.
Get us to call off the chase.
I'd like, Havelock said, his voice sad, to keep Drake from falling out of space and dying. Also, I'm arguing with the pilot of the gunship behind me so that he doesn't need to turn you into a cloud of red mist with his point defense cannons. But you guys are making it harder and harder to be convincing.
Don't threaten. Go get Drake. Get back in the ship. Stop shooting. If one of those shots you're spraying around accidentally hits, I'm taking the gunship off the leash.
There was a long silence.
The red lines on Baja's HUD began disappearing one by one until none were left. The EVA pack fired off one long,